This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mid Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. There's our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. The rains have subsided here on the Tennessee and Kentucky border, hopefully for you as well, and hopefully in the East Coast, Jensen, so we can get some baseball today. Had some rainouts yesterday, and maybe for the rest of the American League East, that was a good thing, and that's where we begin our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Jensen, in your early days of playing baseball in minor leagues, you never pulled a Bull Durham and then started a flood so you got a rain out if things are going south, did you?
I never did, but again, if there was a time that you never wanted a rain out, it was when you were on a winning streak. And that's certainly right. what the Red Sox were hoping. But called it yesterday. We said there were going to be some dicey spots in both the Bronx and at Fenway Park. They do not both play. So day-night double dips for both spots. Somewhere Greg Peterson is smiling ear to ear. Also, good news, though, if you are a Yankee fan, because in game two of the day-night double dip, Max Fried is scheduled to be activated off the injured list. It looks like Gerrit Cole will be the starter for game one. So right now, Dave, I'm going to go ahead and already lock in one of my best bets of the day. That's going to be the under in game one, the under 9.5, minus $1.13 for the Pirates and the Yankees. That matchup right now is going to be Mitch Keller and Gerrit Cole. Now, I get it. You're looking at Mitch Keller, who's been kind of a pinata as of late for opposing offenses. But I think we get some aggression here. Long day of baseball. And, Dave, the other part of the handicap I want to reinforce to people, managers don't really think about game two until they get there. They're concerned with winning game one. So they'll sell out from a bullpen perspective because you can make roster moves in between games. You do get the 27th man as part of the doubleheader. So I'm going to stick with the guns here in, you know, two teams that I think will regress a bit offensively in game one, knowing the pedigree of the pitching that we'll probably see in both of those starts.
It looks like Jake Bennett's going to get the ball for the Red Sox against Dean Kramer in game one. The Sox have not at least announced a starter for game two. Kyle Bradish is going to go for the for Baltimore there. And again, very quickly, Jensen, just being a part of this and knowing how this works, again, the winning streak is one thing, but you like altering your pitching staff now, does that really throw a monkey wrench into what had been going so smoothly for the past 14 wins?
I think, honestly, it really won't matter too much. And with the Red Sox just kind of looking down the line about where they are from a starting perspective, everyone has been really solid. If anything, this is a nice little day off for your bullpen because you're also going to get a day off on Thursday, that being tomorrow. So kind of a weird little scheduling quirk that works out. If you're going to get a rain out like that, you'd rather be at home and be able to kind of have everyone catch their breath. But this will be interesting from a workload perspective here because, boy, the Red Sox offense has been very good. Dave, I did actually lock in. I know you were talking about the Red Sox haven't named a starter for game two, but I already liked the angle for Kyle Bradish coming in. So I did play the Orioles already for the nightcap at plus $1.25 on the money line. I think his repertoire is going to be able to neutralize this Red Sox lineup the way that he's been going. So kind of regardless of what we see in game one, already a play for me in game two on the Orioles on the money line.
Talked about it yesterday in the program here, and I mentioned that maybe if I was looking for a fringe team before we get to the trade deadline that I might want to look and dip my toe in. I didn't do it. It's the San Diego Padres. But, you know, I want to ask you about that, too, just from that. I mentioned that the numbers in the back of the bubblegum card yesterday in the program for guys like Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., even a young Jackson Merrill. And all those guys go yard. Machado has two in a big win against the Braves. I know it's just one game, Jensen, but sometimes can that be enough to get these guys out of their funk and really maybe kickstart a big second half?
Boy, you hope because this Padre lineup has just been dreadful, man. Entering last night, they were one of the worst offenses in all of baseball. Still 26th in runs, 20th in homers, but 27th in both on-base and OPS. However, if you look over the last 7 days, and that includes the beginning, or at least towards the end of the first half, into the second half, Fernando Tatis Jr. Has been the number one offensive player in baseball, according to Fangraphs. Ty France has been the number four offensive player, and Manny Machado is number 30. So if anything, you've gotten the quick offensive start you were hoping for. Now can that continue through what will be a gauntlet the rest of the way? Dave, they've got Martin Perez that they'll have to counteract. They'll have Michael King on the mound today, and then they'll have to go up against Chris Sale in the series finale on Thursday, then down to Miami. And again, we know how the Marlins have been going right now. It is losers of eight in a row, kind of nowhere near the bottom of what it looks like. But Yuri Perez slated to be in that series. So we'll kind of see where it goes. But right now, this is kind of what you hope for if you're a Padre fan and AJ Preller trying to make, you know, a decision. What are we going to be at the deadline? Are we going to be buyers? Are we going to be sellers? Are we going to be both? So good start for the Padres. And Fernando Tatis Jr., longest home run of the year. I watched it live yesterday. If you were on the concourse at Truist Park, batting down to hatches, 474 feet, absolute bomb from the Padres slugger in that one.
We mentioned in hour number one with SEC Media Days, part three today. It's going to be Bama, Florida, Ole Miss, and Texas A&M taking to the podiums today. It does kind of feel like you're getting out there. I love your tailored suit line here. Let's see how cool these coaches can look and how cool they can sound on the mic. I don't know what to expect, but Pete Golding might be the most interesting to me, Jensen. If there's anybody out there that kind of has at least the facade of I just don't give a blank and what you see is what you get, that feels like what you get from Golding. What do you expect to hear today, whether it's Bama, Florida, Ole Miss, or A&M today?
Yeah, obviously with where Ole Miss is and knowing that you have one of the best quarterbacks in all of college football and Trinidad Chambliss back for checks notes, year number six, after all of the off-field drama, the legal issues, and, you know, trying to get reinstated there, if you will. It is one of the most dynamic backfields, not just in the SEC, but in all of college football, not only with Chambliss, Dave, but also with Kawan Lacy, their star running back. I looked at Ole Miss in the over in the win total. I haven't played it, but I also look at trying to increase that, making the college football playoff number. They're right in that plus 175 range at most places. The other guy I'm looking forward to hear, you would talk about a guy who doesn't give a, you know what, about Mike Elko of the A&M Aggies, huh? I mean, if not for, you know, where South Carolina had one of the great implosions. Remember, there was that 30-3 lead they had, and then A&M comes back and scores all those unanswered 28 to win and keep their undefeated season alive. I mean, this is also a really good offense. Marcel Reed, again, one of the great dual threat quarterbacks too. Mario Craver, nice little receiver on the outside. And remember, speaking of SEC Media Days, they got the big transfer in Isaiah Horton, who came over from the Crimson Tide. So we'll see what the early chemistry is there. They do have a brutal, how about this road schedule for A&M? At LSU, Alabama, Missouri, Oklahoma, South Carolina. Not that South Carolina is going to have a lot of resistance. We'll see if Lenora Sellers is healthy for that one. But it's there. I think it's there for A&M to yet again be one of those 9, maybe 10 win teams.
One of my favorite lines from The Usual Suspects, one of the better movies to me, at least in the 90s, and I believe it was Chaz Palminteri's character who says, you know, a rumor is a rumor if it doesn't die. The rumors persist around the SEC and maybe a secession, if you will, from the NCAA. Jensen, I don't know that they could really pull this off. We've seen crazy things in sports before. I mean, I'll show my age a little bit, but you can go back to, I didn't cover it, the AFL and the NFL, and you've got, boy, I remember the USFL when that came about in the 80s, these kind of rival things that happen in football. Now, mostly that's pro football, but in college football, did you ever think we'd see the day where a major conference is at least kicking around the idea of going alone?
I don't think there's sincerity here, if I'm being honest. I think this is always about leveraging and trying to, let's face it, Dave, this is all about money and trying to kind of reassert yourself as not only the best conference, but also one that, all right, if you're going to call my bluff, let's see how serious you are. So Greg Sankey's a mastermind at being able to extract as much value in any potential spot that the SEC has a chance to become even more dominant than they already are. Now, the Big Ten on line one wants to let everyone know they have won the last three football national championships. They've also won the men's tournament as well in college basketball. So I think we're intrigued about where this conversation could go. But boy, I'd be hard pressed to think that they would up and leave, knowing we want the expansion, or at least some people do, from 12 teams to 16 teams for a college football playoff. Just doesn't feel like we're going to get any seceding from the NCAA union anytime soon.
All right. Speaking of maybe peaked interest here, have we peaked our interest now as a soccer country here in the United States? Because outside of the Super Bowl here, the numbers that football did in the World Cup are staggering. The largest audience since the 94 Olympics, Jensen, in America? I mean, we were all about it. Even though the USA had a nice little run early, it didn't seem to matter when it came to the ratings.
The perspective that people need to have is when you look at the number, 66 million is what you said, just for perspective, you are into AFC, NFC championship game territory and above them. Above one of our favorite weekends in all of sports here in these great United States. So if you're half the Super Bowl rating, you've made an impression. And I think in this country, it has turned a lot of casuals into ones that now all of a sudden are a little bit more bought in.
We are a big tent sports country. Like, if you give us something that's intriguing, we will welcome you with open arms, and we will watch your football. Our football, it's up next. What about the Miami Dolphins? You're on the clock right here. It's VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
The NFL betting guide is out right now. If you're a VSiN Pro subscriber, you've already got access to it. If you're not, well, it's a really good time to get on that because you're going to get all of our futures, win totals, divisional races, MVP, Rookie of the Year, Super Bowl odds. Our guide is going to help you get ready for the market before it changes and before training camp begins. So inside of it, breakdowns of all 32 teams, projected win totals, best bets from all of our experts, futures analysis, power ratings, and so much more. Get it now. For our football special, it's just $175. When you go to VSiN.com/subscribe, daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. So check it out at VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Jets, we're getting closer and closer, man. Every passing day, we're getting a little bit closer to the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. And I'm going to talk about one of those teams in the AFC East this year that maybe not great expectations, but that's where we begin today's edition of the Daily Gridiron.
This is the Daily Gridiron.
Sometimes the geography doesn't always match up. A team down south playing in the AFC East would be the fighting fish of the Miami Dolphins. Now, Jensen, this is a whole new kit and caboodle that they've got down there. It's going to look very different. Mike McDaniel is gone. He's now the offensive coordinator there in L.A. with Jim Harbaugh. And we're bringing in, it's Green Bay South. From the new GM, from the head coach to the quarterback. That's what it looks like we're going with here. But, Jensen, on the short end, and again, one of the lowest win totals, the lowest win total out there at 4.5. It is juiced to the under, too, by the way, at -$1.45. I don't know that that's a bad place to start. If you're looking to make a change from a team that has the perception, and I'm putting this in air quotes, if you're watching here on YouTube TV or on FanDuel Sports Network, of soft, and you hate to get that moniker that your team is soft, but that was always the rub with this team when things got cold, when they had to go on the road. You saw McDaniel in the big puffy jacket, and it always seemed to reflect the team, and they didn't play well, Jensen, when the going got tough. I think toughness might be the operative word for what Jeff Hafley and company are going to try to do and bring to South Beach in year number one.
That is the hope, right? And a physical, violent, multiple defensive look kind of outfit here, really trying to change the culture from day number one, stopping the run, winning the line of scrimmage. That is Green Bay Packer football. Now, can you do it in the heat and the humidity of South Beach? Well, at least, Dave, on the schedule, they won't have to do that until the end of September, because that's when they get their first home game at Hard Rock Stadium. On the road against the Las Vegas Raiders and the 49ers to begin, so I would imagine they would just stay out west to train there in between week one and week two. Back home against Kansas City, and then on the road against the Vikings. Dave, this will be a very popular survivor fade, and if you were ever looking to sneak a team through, if you have some cojones to run the Raiders out there in Survivor in game one, that might be the way to sneak a team through. So very anxious to see how that works out. On the surface here, we know the big signing, right? Malik Willis, 3 years, $67.5 million, $45 million guaranteed. They make that investment not for just a year, but this feels like the guy who's going to be the trigger man for a while. Devon Achane, 4-year extension, also going to be there for years to come. Back end of where they are as far as getting to this offense and this line of scrimmage really being a force to be reckoned with, boy, they wasted no time. 12th overall selection in the draft. They get the big offensive tackle, Caden Proctor from Alabama. They did trade down one spot with your Cowboys, who ended up taking Caleb Downs in that spot. But I can get on board with a 6'6", 350-pound plus offensive tackle being able to open some holes for me. That should be pretty good. They do draft Chris Johnson, the cornerback, with their other first-round selection out of San Diego State. They did trade up to get him. And then Jacob Rodriguez was a highly regarded physical linebacker who fits right in there with what Jeff Hafley wants to do with the front seven. He was a second-round selection there. So I guess that's where I start, Dave, is – all right, I'm all for the culture change. I'm all for impacting this team to be a much different version than what we've seen in the last handful of years. But how quickly does that come into play when you've got the starting schedule that they do? I mean, hey, week one could be a wild card. Maybe they do shock the world and they go into Vegas and they beat the Raiders and Kirk Cousins. But can you honestly say that they're going to be competitive against the Niners out in San Francisco, at home against Kansas City, in Minnesota, at home against the Bengals? Like it feels like this could be an 0-5 team with one of the early bye weeks in week six here in the NFL.
Well, I hope that's not the case, because this is one of the teams I've got an overplay on at plus money. And the reason why is, well, a couple of reasons. You mentioned the defense, and I'm so glad we talked defense for once in our team previews here, because we try to be fair and balanced. And that's what you're going to have to rely on. If I'm going to get that 5 wins or more, it's going to be because Jeff Hafley's got this defense figured out. Now, Jordan Brooks, they just signed him yesterday to a massive deal, 3 years, $51.3 million, $35 million guaranteed. So they're going to be going with what I think is going to be one of the youngest rosters in the NFL. And I've heard this said before, and it's true if you've ever been a part of rebuilds, and I saw a lot of those up close and personal in my DC days because it felt like they were rebuilding all the time. You want to go with youth. And the young guys are the guys, like, when in doubt, Jensen, you got an old guy on a bad football team, not to say that they're going to mail it in because they're putting out tape too, but that's normally not what you want. You want to have younger guys on this football team. That's what Jeff Hafley's going to do with that defense. They're going to be flying around the football. I can tell you that right away. And it does remind me, dare I say, of when Jimmy Johnson took over a really bad Cowboys team. And, you know, he ran guys in that Texas heat. Defensively is where Jimmy made his chops there to turn that football team into a three-time Super Bowl champion in short order. Not saying that Jeff Hafley can do that, but that's the recipe. We're going to be physically tough, and we're not going to wear down in the elements the other guys they are. And I think that Malik Willis on the offensive side, coming over from Green Bay, has got that same mentality on that side of the ball. This is not going to be the flashy Dolphins of yesteryear. And I'm not just talking about with Tua – and with Tyreek, In that group from just a couple years ago, I'm saying going back to the Dan Marino days. Whenever you think of the Dolphins, that's what you think of. Flashy offensive football. But ironically, when they won back in the Don Shula days, they won with defense first. That's what Jeff Hafley's trying to do. It's actually an old recipe that I think Miami's forgotten about through the decades that he's trying to bring back now into the forefront. Defense first, low scoring games, grind it out, run the football, and be tough up front. If he can do that, and he did do that to a degree in Green Bay, I think they've got a chance. You mentioned the schedule. It is really tough. If you don't want to be, boisterous as I am on this football team and taking the short plus money here on the 4.5, you can wait if they get off to a bad start. And that number could come down, Jensen. You normally don't see it get past 3.5. But if you got off to an 0-5 start, dare I say you could find some 2.5s out there, and then I might want to jump back in. Because I do think this football team, as time goes, will get better. And maybe from a survivor standpoint, it's going to be really hard if you've got to pick the Dolphins one week, any week. That's going to be tough. You would like to think at home against the Jets, but that's going to be a divisional matchup. And we think the Jets might be improved a little bit, Jensen. So we'll get dicey there if you have to use them. And normally in order to win something like Circa Survivor, at some point, you probably will.
The last winless team market on DraftKings, just kind of with our idea here, or at least my idea, if their schedule early on, if they can't get the win in Vegas, they're really up against it here, and they have the early bye week in week 6. They are the second shortest shot as the last winless team on DraftKings at 4-1. Arizona, not a shocker, plus 225, the short shot.
Mm-hmm.
The fewest wins market, they are plus 350, Arizona plus 250. If you were bullish on Miami, which you are, is there a team in that market that you'd rather pivot to? Would it be the Raiders and Kirk Cousins? Would it be the Browns still trying to figure out Deshaun Watson, Shador Sanders? They're plus 1050. You want to talk about a slap in the face. They got your Atlanta Falcons, David, 15-1 for fewest wins.
Yeah,
oh, boy.
You don't bet that, people. That is not going to happen. So you're going to be on the short end of the stick there if you bet that one. Arizona feels like the obvious choice here, and I can understand why they have the short shot to be there. I don't mind this roster a lot because I think Achane and I think Malik, they're going to be able to ball control this thing a little bit. Now, when he's been able to throw, he's actually shown that he's pretty proficient. Remember, this was a guy coming out of Liberty where people thought he could be really – the future of the league at that time. It kind of bombed out there in Tennessee a little bit, and Green Bay stole him. If you remember that a couple of years ago, right there in training camp. And I remember that move very distinctly going, wow, why would they go out there and they gave up a late round pick to go get him? And boy, did they know exactly what they were looking for. And he has matured right before your eyes. That's why I'm bullish on this football team. I like what Green Bay South is going to be this year. And I do. I like that plus money play of over 4.5. I think they're going to surprise you, Jensen, and many other people out there earlier. I think they might be a little bit tougher than people think they're going to be. They're not going to be a pushover for those fighting fish down there in Miami. Let's come back. Let's bet the bill. Let's talk some golf. And maybe could be there some changes, Jensen, in the way the game is played that could help out the players and the fans. That's next right here on VSiN by the Books.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books, on this Wednesday morning. We're going to have Wednesdays with Wes coming up in the very next hour. Let's get in next hour, get his thoughts on the 3M Open. Yes, we still have more golf to play. I know the major championships are all over. And the Bryson DeChambeau debate rages on Twitter. It's fantastic. Actually, love the dialogue here. People adamant one way or the other. Hopefully, Jensen, no rules officials will be needed, whether it's a TIO, whether it's a fifth hole, Gorge Bush, we'll have to figure out. But here up there in Minnesota, we understand Scottie Scheffler, you just don't see numbers like this, people, in golf betting. He's plus 65 to win the tournament. You almost have to go $20 south before you get to Kurt Kitayama at plus 2250. I don't know that I've ever seen a wider variance from 1 to 2 on the PGA Tour. It might be the biggest one since the Tiger Woods days.
Yeah, this is one of those tournaments where a winner without outright market is probably more advantageous to be able to play here. So not mad at you if you wanted to do that. And it makes a lot of sense just knowing it. So if we do go to winner without, Dave, the short shot is Kirk Kitayama. He drops from 2250 to 18-1. Matt McNealy shortly behind him at plus 1850. So that's where I would advocate if you're getting into placement markets and outright markets for this tournament, that's where I would go. TPC Twin Cities, Dave, long par 71. So accuracy and trying to stay dry in the land of 10,000 lakes will be advantageous to you. strong approach play. I know we say that a lot in many tournaments, especially your mid to long irons, though. That's part of the caveat. And when we're looking to bet that build this week. So let me tell you where my FanDuel lineup is. I'll pause and get your thoughts because it is a little different from FanDuel to DraftKings. As always, if you're getting into DFS, the FanDuel side of golf lineups, you get the extra $10,000 in salary. So that allows us to shop more towards the top of the leaderboard, if you will, as far as the odds market goes. So no shock here. We're going to have Scottie Scheffler to lead us off. But we're also going to go a couple of names that you may not really know, and some may feel like they're off the beaten path. Mac Meisner has been really outstanding in his last handful of tournaments. Tied for third at the Charles Schwab, tied for sixth at the John Deere, tied for ninth at Myrtle Beach, and a solid showing last week at the Scottish Open. Do love him as a mid-tier play here at 9,500. Also, Ricky Castillo, who just won the Puerto Rican Open earlier this year, had a top five at the Cognizant Classic. I think ownership not going to be too high on him. A guy we've had before, Dave, Matty Schmidt, quality year, top four of the PGA Championship, multiple top tens earlier this year. Great ball striking in spurts, has some experience at this course. And again, not a name I think people will be like, oh yeah, let me plug Matty Schmidt in and look at this lineup. Patrick Rogers, Andrew Putnam, two guys we've had here before. Patrick Rogers, a veteran, multiple starts here in this tournament. So not a guy that has really shown flashes here at TPC Twin Cities, but a guy that you think could make the weekend and at least give you a solid score. And then of course, Andrew Putnam, when the putting is right, and it usually is, that's consistency that you want to have. So he's been pretty decent in his history at this course. So that is my FanDuel bet the build. Any thoughts on the six men that will take the course tomorrow with that lineup?
We have one in a long shot, but I'm going to get to my two that I've keeping my eye on, and I don't see them yet as I'm looking in preview here for your next one. I don't see it in either one of my two there, but I will say this. Ricky Castillo is one of those guys that I have on my card for a long shot play. So I'm with you on Ricky here. I think he's going to have a very good week. But finish out your bet the build here because I'm still looking for one of my guys on there and I don't see it on your list.
All right. So Scottie Scheffler back at the top here for DraftKings bet the build. We're going to go with Ricky Castillo, Andrew Putnam. Old friend Tommy Hoagie is going to make the list. And again, a long-term approach guy that can be great. Historically has been at top of the field in strokes gained and in many of these stretches. That is a key skill you're going to need on this course. We're going to go with David Lipsky, usually at the lower price point. He did finish tied for third here last year, Dave, at minus 20. That was a really nice guy and for a really cheap price. I think he's going to go pretty low owned here, so a little cheap upside play, if you will. And then Patrick Rogers back in there. So the three holdovers, actually four holdovers, Scheffler, Castillo, Putnam, and Rogers. And then the two new additions, Tommy Hoagie and David Lipsky.
My two to watch, I've got two Americans that I really like, young Americans. And one of them is a guy that I have not played a lot this year, but you know I love to play him. That's Mav. And we are a negative ghost rider. The pattern is full. Maverick McNealy will fly high this week. I love him. You can get him. I got him at 30-1. There are some shorter numbers out there, still worth playing, but I did get him at 30-1. And Jackson Suber is right now at 45-1. And young Jackson is playing really well. We saw him, obviously, at the British Open, and he really did hold his own, I felt like, against an elite field. So I don't think he'll be in awe if he happens to be placed, let's say, with Scottie Scheffler somewhere on the weekend, being at the top of that leaderboard over there at the British Open. I think that's really going to serve him well. And, man, is that kid playing some really good golf after qualifying for the U.S. Open. Now, I mentioned all the consternation here has not been about Ryan Fox winning at the British Open. It's all been about the rules and did Bryson break him? Did he know he break him? Did he cheat? All those sort of things. And we saw the TIO going on. there might be even a larger problem at play in the world of golf, and it does affect performance, which then affects betting markets, and that's pace of play, something that former world number one Colin Montgomery, who I know in America sometimes can be, was a polarizing figure, comments he had about Tiger Woods and going up back then when he was world number one. Here's what Colin had to say about today's modern day typical round of golf.
Christ almighty, last night, was it 5 hours 40?
Yeah.
5 hours 40. Trevino here, right? Trevino, 1971. He finished 14 under. Won the championship. 14 under, Trevino. And he did it in less than 4 hours. A three ball. That wasn't the two ball, that was the three ball. How has it gone from less than 4 hours, or was it just about on 4 hours for the three ball, to 5 hours 40? How has it got to that stage? How has it got to that? TV hates it, spectators hate it. Too long, the chat between the caddy and the player, my God, it goes on forever. The book comes out. How many times have they got the bloody book out of the thing? Once that ball is placed on the green, it should not be marked again to get the line on the ball, and then this business about this, what do you call it, this aim point. Oh, my God, don't talk to me about that. It's, oh, God, it does my head in, the slow play. How do we get back to that? And I don't know. And they, yes, they say there's a deterrent for slow play, don't they? They say there's a huge deterrent for slow play. 5 hours 40, was anybody penalised yesterday? No. Something's got to be done, because it's too slow. Far too slow. And it's my really, if I had a bee in the bonnet, that was it, you know? A slow play.
I couldn't love that any more than I do from Colin Montgomery. I tweeted that out there, and boy, did it kind of took off there. And some people are like, I hate Monty, but he's right. I'm like, how can you hate Colin Montgomery? I just don't know that, America. Like, let that go. The guy is a charm. But Jensen, he makes a great point about slow play. Nobody's getting penalized for that. We're not talking about that, right? We're talking about all the rules and all this other stuff. And yet we have these monstrous long days that are out there, and it does affect play. I got this tweet from a Scott McNeely. Well, he said this, Jensen, Colin is absolutely correct, responding to my tweet. My four boys and my wife and I played in under 4 hours at a six-some regularly. Give everybody helmets. If you don't get to a scoring tent within 4 hours of your tee time, you get DQ'd. No need to talk and play through. Fire away. Yell for Lally. Viewership will skyrocket. Love to see Rory play through Bryson. Sorry, Mav had to post this. He's apologizing to his son, Maverick McNeely. So Scott McNeely's all for the increased pace of play. I don't know about putting helmets on guys here, but what about Scott's idea? If you don't know who Scott is, you might want to look him up. The guy's a genius. That if, you know, we're just going to start bombing away here, and I'm going to yell four, Jensen, because you're playing too slowly, and I'm just going to hit right into the next group.
First of all, this might be an all-timer in our history together on VSiN by the Books. That tirade with the dialect, the vocabulary. If you had Bonnet on your bingo card being mentioned in today's episode, congratulations, you're a winner. Does Colin Montgomery with Patrick Cantlay? How long does he like? What's the over-under? Five and a half holes? For Colin Montgomery before, he takes a club out of the bag and then we have mano y mano there.
He loses it.
I can only imagine what that would be like.
But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we were kidding about this, and then this whole other dialogue started because of Colin Montgomery's comments about your sport, baseball. And, like, you know, you put in the pitch clock. Look, I got to be honest, Jensen, I didn't know that I liked that idea when it happened. Now I don't think anybody thinks twice about it, right? I mean, Why not put these guys on a clock, on some sort of clock? It seems like a fixable problem if baseball could do it, correct?
I would say so. Lewis Ross administration would certainly consider that as an executive order on day one.
Would we hire Colin Montgomery? He's in our cabinet, right?
He could be an ambassador. He could be a candidate. We've got to vet him.
Absolutely love it. Let's get to some more very interesting comments about the SEC. Will they really secede? That's next right here at VSiN by the Books.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
The Circus Survivor documentary is back for another season, and this one is bigger than ever. 7 all-new episodes kick off every Wednesday starting at 9 p.m. Eastern tonight. So episode 1 is going to take you inside the growth of the most electrifying contest in sports betting. Now, with $18.7 million on the line in the massive new Grandissimo format, raising the stakes even higher. So follow those sharp minds and bold personalities. They think they've got what it takes to go the distance this year. Whether you're playing Circus Survivor yourself or just love the drama of a season-long grind, this is, in fact, must-watch TV. Check it out every Wednesday starting at 9 p.m. Eastern on VSiN. That is going to be very exciting. Again, episodes 6 through 10 will air August 16th or 12th through the 16th. And again, you can watch all those episodes on YouTube TV at VSiN Live. So great opportunities to watch that quest for $14.2 million. Let's get back to the SEC, the drama that is the SEC, Jensen Lewis, in today's edition of the Daily Docket.
Your snapshot of odds, trends, and futures. This is the Daily Docket.
We always say this, that social media is not real life. Well, you know, Heather Dinich goes out there and makes some reports about the SEC, and you would think Heather Dinich was the one that came up with the idea of the SEC possibly seceding, Jensen. That's not the way this stuff works, but boy, did they come at her. You know, don't shoot the messenger here. But again, very quickly, for those that might not be aware, there are rumblings as we continue SEC Media Day and days down there in Tampa, Florida, that maybe the conference is actually considering seceding, if you will, from the NCAA. Jensen, I think you and I think that this is more about posturing than anything else to try to gain more leverage. That's normally what you do when you throw out extremes like that. Then you normally come back a little bit more closer to the middle. What do you make of the rumors so far? And do you think it's just smoke, or do you think there's actually any fire there?
There's fire. Oh, there always is a bit of it, because why would it surface and be talked about as much as it has if there wasn't some sort of agenda? Now, does Greg Sankey, commissioner of the SEC, actually think that they'll do it? I don't think so. And even of his own admission, you know, whatever has been brought to the forefront here isn't exactly what they have in mind, or at least what a framework of that would look like. I think you would have to get a dance partner on the surface, Dave. It's not just as though the SEC go play amongst themselves. It's not like the Premier League, you know, where you've got a bunch of teams that you could just have and everyone's trying to be who you are. But I know that, you know, when you hear some of the things that are talked about, the frustration about, you know, where that preferred middle ground could be is not, you know, really presented itself just yet. So I think there's more impatience about a system that is viewed as being broken. You obviously would want collaboration with the other Power Four conferences, but is there smoke? Is there some fire? There has to be a little bit if it is being addressed this broadly before the season starts.
Well, let's hear from Heather Dinich at ESPN, and the possibility, is this a real possibility of the SEC going alone?
Not Super League. What we're talking about here is the SEC specifically separating from the NCAA. Here's why. Because if they don't get federal legislation, university presidents and chancellors and SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey in this league are saying we need to create our own rules. What does that mean? What does that look like? Well, not just football, Pat, but you could be seeing SEC softball and baseball and basketball all just playing each other in an SEC-centric league. Why? Because part of it is, well, you can say, hey, football, you have $40 million for your roster. Softball, you have $10 million, whatever it is, for your rosters, right? So everyone is playing with the same rules, the same salary caps, and the same, just playing by the same rules, right? But Greg Sankey said that that's not the preference. And I want to go back to your Super League question. Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey have both said publicly that no one is talking about a Super League. What we are talking about, what SEC is talking about, is them separating from the NCAA only if they don't get federal legislation to help antitrust with protection for the NCAA. So I'll stop there. What else do you have for me?
Now, again, there's a lot to break down there here, Jensen. But in the short, again, this is us, the SEC, going alone, theoretically playing, taking our ball and playing it under our same structure, the money that we generate. We don't have to worry about whether it's going to be, quote unquote, an unfair, balanced system with other leagues. With the SEC being the cash cow, I'm a little surprised by that, because if it is always about the money and this is what it's always about, Jensen, it seems like to me they're making the most of it anyway.
So I would look at some of the NIL issues here, and there is a lack of transparency still on that front. And hey, you have mega donors at Michigan, at Indiana, at some of these other Big Ten schools. And I do think the underlying part of it is, and I think Heather is onto something here, where we don't have a formal salary cap, if you will. There's not right. like a, hey, you are only allowed to spend $15 million on your football roster. That's it. Anything over that, there's penalties. You're not eligible for the college football playoff, et cetera. There's no guardrails there yet. So I understand why the SEC would say, okay, we have arguably one of the great TV contracts in the history of football. We generate revenue. We have entire economies that are set up around just football programs in these southern states. And think about that. Just GDP alone, Dave, of some of these state budgets, a lot of revenue is predicated off of what happens on Saturdays most of these weekends come the fall and wintertime. All that being said, I know there's going to be legal ramifications. There are so many hurdles to get over here. And if we are going to get more playoff expansion, which it looks like we will, Dave, then an agreement can get to where compromise ends up being guaranteed spots, which I know the SEC wants. The Big Ten is still a huge proponent of not only expansion, but not massive expansion. And hey, they're on top right now. So the Big Ten might say, okay, if you want to go ahead and go, fine, we're the kings right now. But I do think there's more involved here with the litigation, and I think the congressional legislation, that you've got to have guardrails not only on the NIL issues, the budgets, the five-year eligibility rule. Remember, the president of the United States has kind of come in on sure. this conversation about, hey, we just talked Trinidad Chambliss, right? 6 years of eligibility. You got guys that keep playing in their mid-20s. I mean, do you have to start the clock and then have the clock run out for eligibility purposes? Dave, we got men. Look at Indiana's roster last year. Very veteran, playing some kids. You got to have at least a little bit of a fairer playing ground just with the roster construction in and of itself.
Let's hear from Kirby Smart at Georgia, because Jensen, the weird dance that the coaches have to play is, it's really not their decision to make. They got to follow orders, if you will, but the coaches are going to be asked about it at Media Day, and Kirby Smart was.
I've actually been saying that for a long time to our president and our administrators, that, my frustration is, I sit in a meeting, and so many times I sit in a meeting, and I learned this, I think, 11 years ago, my first SEC head coaches meeting. I had a coach tell me, we will not get anything done in these meetings because we don't have any power or any control. We sit and say what we want, but that doesn't necessarily come to fruition. So I've learned that, until we get governance and we have someone that actually has the power to make decisions, or we can make decisions within our own community, we're not going to have much control. And that's unfortunate, but that's where we sit right now. And if that's the best alternative to get everybody playing by the same rules, then I would want to do that.
Again, I mean, you understand you got to be the company man here. And if that's what the league's going to decide to do, then I'm for that. So says Kirby Smart. I get it. But, he was told 11 years ago, Jensen, we're powerless. Like, until we have control, we can say whatever we want to say. They're going to pat us on the head. And then when we all leave the room, we're going to go back to the same standing operating procedure, right? Does Kirby have any point in your eyes to his statement there?
Well, if you listen to Paul Feinbaum, I'll read his quote directly. He said, quote, "I think that's what they would like to do as far as the Big Ten and the SEC. is getting control. The issue is litigation for antitrust. If the Big Ten and the SEC suddenly formed a super league, they would get destroyed in court, and that's really the issue. All kinds of tentacles here, Dave. TV rights, what have you. A lot to unwind. Yep. Let's just go play football. Let's go put the best teams on the field. Let's get the top 12 teams, and let's go crown a national champion here in a handful of months.
What, you don't want the lawyers involved? Because it sounds like that's lowering up. We're going to get some lawyers involved and talk football in the SEC. No thanks. I'm with Jensen. Let's play the games. When we come back, we're going to have Les Reynolds join the program Wednesdays with Les. Talk more about the 3M Open. What goes up must come down on our stock up and stock down. And our best bets are straight ahead right here. I'm Jason by the Books.